Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 99. My name is John. Help me make the most of freedom and of pleasure. Nothing ever lasts forever. I'll talk a little bit more about this process next time, but as you may know, I put out one podcast per month. That usually means the first week or so, I try to figure out what I want to talk about. Spend a couple of weeks writing it, refining it, then record, edit, and publish. I started writing the opening to this podcast the mid-afternoon of May 5th, 2018. And at that point, it was at the end of a really shitty week. It was a week of Mondays. People were angry. Things were breaking down. Misery seemed to be multiplied. I didn't talk to anybody that week who felt positive. Sure, a few customers finally showed a little happiness after a problem got fixed, but nobody I spoke to at work or among friends or family had a good week. Maybe it was just an unfortunate confluence of events, but it weighed me down. So maybe I wasn't in the best of moods when I started this, but man, the rest of the world sure wasn't helping matters. There's a lot of stupid shit going on in this country. I mean, there always is, but specifically back then. On one side, you had Michelle Wolf emceeing the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and she made some jokes. And you'd think that this was 17th century France, with the way the right-wing masses were fopping around in the aftermath. Oh! Let me be completely honest. I haven't really researched this much at all, so I'm coming from a position of pretty much near ignorance. Since I couldn't avoid hearing about it in the media or reading about it in social media, I read through an article from ABC's website about the 5 most controversial jokes she said at the event. Now, obviously the written word cannot properly describe the context or the delivery, but the so-called jokes on the list range from not funny at all to moderately snarky, but none of them clever or witty. Maybe there were better jokes, but that's as far as I got with it. Now, I believe I have a legitimate reason for why I didn't read much about the White House Correspondents' Dinner. This is my reason. I don't care. It's the fucking White House Correspondents' Dinner. Who really cares? I mean, unless you're a White House correspondent, you're a family member of a White House correspondent, or a fanatic sycophant of a White House correspondent, why would you care? It's a bunch of people getting together to talk about how great they are. Look at all of you out in the audience. You're great. Look at me up here talking to you. I'm great. Hey, how about all those people we like who aren't here tonight? They're great. Hey, how about all the people we don't like? Fuck them. Let's talk shit about the people we don't like. It's basically all of this, a bunch of self-aggrandizing egotists. It's a room full of people there to suck each other's dicks. Now, if that were literal, yeah, then maybe I would then be interested, but it's not, so I'm not. Apparently, somewhere along the way, this thing went from the style of, you know, the old Dean Martin roasts, where it had the feel of a bunch of friends teasing each other, but you knew everything was in good fun, to more of the modern celebrity roast style, which relies on ruthless shock. But that's where it will probably be for the duration of this administration, at least. Again, my question for the right wingers out there is, why do you even care? Like, this is a surprise to you? That an event compromised of nearly all left-wing media, being led by a comedian who writes for a show that is unabashedly against Republicans, would say mean things about Trump and his staff? Don't forget to collect your winnings on your way out, Captain Renault. Your idiotic reactions are only giving them fuel to do it again next year. You're giving your opponents the vitriol they need to demonize you and strengthen their base. And then on the other side, we have Kanye West, who dares to express an opposing opinion from what is expected of him by the left-leaning masses. And so what? He threw some support toward Trump. So the fuck what? I mean, I don't understand why he did it, but then again, I don't understand how he is now on the most hated list in liberal America. Now, I could probably name a couple of things Trump has done sort of right, just like I could probably name a couple of things Obama did sort of right. I mean, what's the old saying? Even a stop clock is right twice a day. Frankly, I don't understand how anybody could give support to Trump, or Hillary, or Sanders, or any other Republican or Democrat. Just because I don't support them doesn't mean I look to spread hatred around. I mean, I'm angry. It's the Raging Rhino podcast. But it's born of frustration and confusion, not hatred. Hell, in my dating profile, I tell people up front that if you openly express hatred for people who dare to think differently from you, I don't want your poison personality in my life. My question for the left-wingers out there is, are you that rigid, narrow-minded, and draconian that if a person from a minority group strays from your mandated beliefs, you immediately ostracize them? You're only giving your opponents the vitriol they need to demonize you and strengthen their base. Is anybody else unnerved at the abject hatred that was sent out so swiftly? Someone is straying from us. Destroy them! Not that the right wing fares much better on that scorecard. They have their agenda, and they boycott anybody who gets in their way. That's the microcosm. In the macrocosm, the left wing and the right wing want to tear each other apart so that their cadre can reap selfish benefits. The same basic message comes from each side. I can't have my rights if you have that other right. Well, there's your first mistake. No natural right can take away another natural right. Libertarians and their allies have been saying for years that Republicans and Democrats are two sides of the same coin. You are given the illusion of something different, but the reality is, it's just the same damn thing. I started recognizing that early on as this podcast developed, and I've tried to become more and more aware of that and trying to break my old conservative habits when I recognize myself acting that way. Case in point, way back early on in this podcast, I did a talk about Hollywood. Now, I stand by a lot of my points on there, like, I think it's really shitty of an actress to try to shame people into passing up on a well-paying job in favor of working for nothing in some foreign country. I stand by that. It's one thing to give a measured opinion on the advantages of working for nothing. It's another to talk about somebody getting paid for a job with a condescending, supercilious sneer in your voice. However, I was wrong to say that she should shut up. That was my old habitual conservative reaction. Just like every other time a celebrity gives an opinion, no matter how much it irritates me, No matter how much it makes me roll my eyes, no matter how intellectually vacant their comments may be, I want them to say it. We all need them to say it. That's why freedom of speech is a natural right. We should know what other people think, and they should be free to express their opinions without being silenced. Let's be honest. We all love it when a celebrity has some political statement we agree with. But when they say something we disagree with, the knee-jerk reaction from most people is to tell them to shut up. If it's especially egregious these days, they call for a boycott, and they call for sponsors to pull their money so the person who said something that goes against their delicate sensibilities will be silenced. It wasn't that long ago when things were different. People would say, you know, if you don't like what they're saying on that TV show, turn it off. Just don't listen to it. Let them talk, but you don't have to listen. Now, if you don't like what they're saying on that TV show, call the network. Call the companies who air commercials. Maybe even confront the show producers face to face. It's not enough for these people anymore to just live and let live. Say or do anything that does not completely agree with their version of morality, and you're the most evil thing in the world. I'm just a middle-aged man, but I've already seen the pendulum swing. In my youth, side A did everything they could to censor and demonize side B. Now, side B is doing everything they can to censor and demonize side A. And all that talk for all these generations of coming together, or making peace with each other, or finding common ground, or respecting each other's differences, it's all just a load of bullshit. Neither side wants that. They don't want peace. They don't want justice. They want revenge. They want vendetta. You know something? You want to make a snide comment about a person who dares to try to get a job that will help them achieve their personal dreams? Fine. Whatever. Just speak your piece. But my support ends with your freedom to express the opinion. It's just not good enough for people like that. No, it's not enough for it to be just an opinion of how you should do things. No, the collectivists never stop at just the opinion. They want to force someone who earned their wealth through honest means to give up some of it, or all of it, to satisfy their collective sense of morality. Now it's no longer simply about exercising your right to speak your mind. Now there has to be action. You have to bend to their will. See, just saying somebody is wrong in your opinion, it's not a violation of somebody else's natural rights. But forcing them to surrender their rightfully earned pay, that's a violation. And I don't want to sit idly by while you collectivists continually force your way into our private lives. It doesn't matter if your morality tells you it's for a good cause. It doesn't matter if you think it's moral to go on jingoistic crusades around the globe to shove Pax Americana down the throats of Middle East nations and you want our taxes to pay for it. It doesn't matter if you think it's moral for others to be forced to pay for the health care of strangers and you want taxes to fund it. We have this long-standing belief. We believe we have the right to stick our nose into somebody else's business. And the reason why I pulled income taxes into this monologue is because the preoccupation with our fellow citizens' privacy really kicked into high gear when personal income taxes were made legal in the United States. That opened the floodgates, so to speak. Once government was allowed into the wallets, purses, and bank accounts of individuals and businesses, then the intrusion flowed more freely into other aspects. Now, when I first wrote the phrase, "We believe we have the right to stick our noses into somebody else's business," I meant we as in our country, our fellow United States citizens. But the more I thought about it, it goes far beyond that. Past this country, past the Western world, past recent history, it's quite possible that this has been the problem with humanity from the get-go. But just let me use life in the United States as examples. On a mini level, that means we look over at, say, a rich person. And we say, oh, they shouldn't be allowed to have that much. Others will look at a sexually promiscuous person and say, oh, they shouldn't be allowed to have that much. I guess that works either way, doesn't it? On a macro level, though, that means we clamor for taxation under the delusion that a bureaucracy knows or cares how to better spend other people's money. We clamor for so-called deviant behavior to be outlawed because we're too afraid to open ourselves to any idea outside our narrow, sanctimonious scope. All that matters is what to do about those other people, that other side. You know, that other side that does things that goes against our morality. I mean, take your pick. Maybe you think the immoral people out there are the rich, or the poor, or the gays, or the Christians, or the Muslims, or the Hollywood left, or the Tea Party, or the capitalists, or the Occupy movement. Hell, there are those out there who think the libertarians are the immoral ones. They all have their schemes. The first part of their plan is to slow down the other side. Then slowing down becomes stopping, and stopping becomes taking back what you claim you lost by eroding the rights of those immoral people. But still, it's not enough. You want to decimate their rights. You want to destroy their rights. You want to subjugate them. And that's what that cancerous little personality trait is really all about. It's not that someone else shouldn't be allowed to have that much. Is that you want to control what they do have based on your morality. You're so engrossed in your own self-righteousness that you can't even be bothered to change the channel if something offends you. You'd rather it be silenced. You can't let them go on with your lives. You have to end their income. Everybody wants their side to win. Everybody wants the other side to be subservient. Everybody wants to rule the world. No. No. Not everybody. See, there's this corresponding false notion that has accompanied the smug invasiveness into other people's lives that has plagued humanity since before civilization's inception. We believe that the only way one side can succeed is by destroying the other side. You can't build what you want unless you destroy what others are building. It doesn't have to be that way. There's a belief out there that tells us both sides, all sides, can figure out how to live peacefully. There's an economic theory and a sociological theory, and neither has ever truly been tried. And 999 times out of 1,000, if somebody tells you about these theories, you're getting misinformed. Because the people who present the information are either themselves misinformed or they have an agenda to malign the theories in order to get you to believe their false narrative. Now, the economic theory, in its correctly presented form, is this. Person A, without the intimidation of any outside force, offers a good or service for payment X. Person B, without the intimidation of any outside force, accepts the terms. Person A completely fulfills the terms, and person B completely pays the agreed amount. That's it. That's the entire economic theory. Seriously. I know what you're thinking. Oh my God. That's the most evil concept in the world, isn't it? What kind of monster would propose that two people be allowed to mutually agree of their own free will to an exchange of goods and services for a set amount of money? But that is the basic concept of capitalism. What you've heard is capitalism is not. Passing legislation as a member of government so that you and or your friends can benefit financially is not capitalism. Encouraging regulation of your industry so that your company can more easily dominate while crushing smaller, newer companies and stifling innovation is not capitalism. Giving taxpayer money to a failing company is not capitalism. Refusing service to somebody because of your prejudice is not capitalism. Government telling a company how to run their business is not capitalism. That simple idea, the free exchange of goods and services for mutually agreed payment, is anathema to so many people because they believe it's their right to interfere. We don't think the price you're offering is moral. We don't think the goods you're selling are moral. We don't think person B should be allowed to purchase what person A is offering. If person A does not provide the goods or services as offered, if person B does not pay the agreed amount, or if somebody's natural rights are violated by the transaction, then an outside force is needed to get involved. Otherwise, get your fucking nose out of people's business. Let people come to a mutual agreement to trade goods and services. Let the people who provide the best service work hardest, and even those who get lucky, be the ones who build the most wealth. Let the people who inform themselves on the best goods and services to purchase get the best deal. Let the entrepreneurs and innovators of the free market provide for the ever-changing needs and wants of the citizens. Yeah, I know. I'm being crazy. The sociological side isn't quite as divisive, but it's also quite misunderstood. All human interactions must be voluntary. In other words, you cannot force people to interact with each other if they don't want to. Likewise, you cannot force people apart if they want to interact. All natural rights must be honored, not just the select few you like best. Could it work? Again, don't know, never tried it. I dream the impossible dream of libertarianism. And again, just like capitalism, there's a lot of misunderstandings. Being in favor of gay marriage, but advocating for the United States to initiate military force with another nation, is not libertarianism. wanting government to end the personal income tax, but being in favor of unnecessary government regulation on private business, is not libertarianism. Wanting access to education, but wanting it to be paid for by other people, is not libertarianism. Demanding government respect your right to do with your body as you please, but demanding government force others to pay for your health care, is not libertarianism. Liberalism, the left wing, is half-assed. Conservatism, the right wing, is half-assed. Each one champions their collection of rights while trying to destroy the other's rights. Libertarians champion all natural rights. Every single one. Now, accepting the terms means you have to allow people to make decisions you may not like. If somebody wants to marry a person of the same sex, then you need to get the hell out of their way and let them get married. If a business owner refuses to bake the couple a cake, you need to let them make that decision. If somebody wants to use a drug, own an assault rifle, own a business that allows you to smoke indoors, if somebody wants to provide a good or service without being licensed or regulated by the government, or somebody else wants to patronize such a business, you have to let them make that decision for themselves. Now, you may think it's a mistake, and maybe I agree with you, but we have to let them make that mistake for themselves. You cannot force your morality on others. Force is fascism. For too long, sections of humanity have tried and succeeded in forcing their morality on others. Now, it may start out seemingly innocent, wanting to make your country better, but even those with the best intentions fall prey. And despite the lip service, it's never about building up the diverse group of people. Rather, it's pitting them against each other and finding scapegoats to blame for the problems of the nation. Maybe you think I'm talking about corporatist Donald Trump blaming illegal immigrants. Maybe you think I'm talking about socialist Obama blaming rich people. Maybe I'm talking about National Socialist Hitler blaming the Jews. Maybe it's all of them. Each are different representatives of collectivism. But all are on the road to fascism. And it always starts small and seemingly benign. Fascism grows by degrees, usually starting with a nudge, because who really cares about a silly, simple little nudge? But then the nudge turns into a push. The push to a shove, the shove to a punch, and the punch to a melee. We all see the melee when it's too late, but only the astute see the nudge. Now, one party does not house all the fascists. They're everywhere. Maybe your moral bias excuses their actions because they're doing something you agree with. But that's the fatal error. When you allow natural rights to be taken away from people you've been taught are your enemy, when the tide turns and your opposition takes control, you have no argument for your natural rights to be taken away from you for similar reasons. You're just too blinded, as I once was, by the collectivist notion that these self-proclaimed experts know better how to run things. In United States politics, you have one side screaming, no, our liberalism is the best way to go. The other side says, no, our conservatism is the best way to go. I'm tired of the sanctimony of the Republicans and the Democrats thinking they know what's best for us, thinking they can choose the winners and the losers, thinking they should be allowed control over our lives. Aren't you tired of it yet? Aren't you willing to live your life the way you see fit and get out of the way of others to live their lives the way they see fit? Look, there were approximately 250 million people of voting age in 2016. Approximately 63 million of those voted for Trump, and approximately 66 million voted for Hillary. Now that means approximately 121 million decided neither Trump nor Hillary were worth voting for. Both of the big government parties in our political duopoly want us to believe that they have superior numbers. But the largest block of voting age people in the United States say neither deserve their vote. Imagine what could happen if 121 million voters coalesced to get the intrusion out of every facet of our lives. Trusting yourself to know what is best for you. Respecting your fellow citizens to decide what is best for them. Demanding that others stay out of all aspects of your private life. Refusing to stick your nose into any aspect of another person's private life. Allowing people to exercise their natural rights even when it goes against your personal morality. Allowing people to make what you and I might consider mistakes, so that they and all of society can learn from them. Not providing a crutch so that greedy and selfish people and entities can exploit and steal the hard work of others. In other words, true freedom. Do you think 121 million people could be convinced that is the best way? Maybe deep down inside they already know. They just don't know how to make it come true. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.